Let's start from the top of Vav Amud Aleph. So the Gemara says, Amar Rava, Meis Biyom Tov Rishon Yisasku Bo Amimim, Meis Biyom Tov Sheni Yisasku Bo Yisrael, Vafilu Bishnei Yomim Tovim Shal Rosh Hashanah, Masha Ein Kein Bevetza, Nahardai Amre Af Bevetza. So the Gemara starts out with the Halacha and then with the Machloka. So the Halacha, which the Gemara is going to end up picking apart, and we're going to see if it actually applies, Bezman Hazeh, the initial Halacha is that if a person dies on the first day of Yantif, yet you can get non-Jews to bury him. You yourself are not allowed to bury a mace on Yantif Rishon. If it's Yantif Sheni, the Gemara says, then a Jew is allowed to bury, perhaps even obligated to bury the mace. However, the Gemara says that when it comes to Rosh Hashanah, so when it comes to the 2 days of Rosh Hashanah, we in other words, we say the same thing is true there as well. In other words, on the second day of, in other words, the second day of Rosh Hashanah for the purposes of burial is the same as any other Yantif Sheni. However, Rava says that's in contrast to the famous halach of a Beitza Shenolda. So again, as we've already mentioned this before, Beitza Shenolda on the first day of Yantif is mutter on the second day because of the principle of Sveika Dioma. But when it comes to Rosh Hashanah, as the Gemara is going to talk about later, since Rosh Hashanah is a Yoma Arichta, right, since the second day is basically an extension of the first, if an egg was laid on the first day of Rosh Hashanah, it remains Mukta on the second day. That's only according to Rava. However, the rabbis from Nahardah disagreed, and they say, no, that even by a Beitza, the same distinction applies, meaning to say that on the second day of, in other words, an egg that was laid on the first day of Rosh Hashanah is mutter on the second day. Why do they disagree with Rava on this point? So the Gemara clarifies. The Gemara says, Dilma ma'avri le'le'elul ha'amar achimna bar kahana marav mimos ezra ve'elach lo'matzinu elul me'ubar. What, you think that they're going to add a 30th day to Elul? It's not going to happen, because since the days of Ezra, Elul has only been 29 days today, right? Today is the 29th day of Elul. So the Gemara says that from the days of Ezra and onwards, it's never happened that we've had 30 days of Elul. So the Gemara says, because of that, the rabbis from Nahardah assumed that an egg that was laid on the first day of Rosh Hashanah, there's no Sveika Diyoma, there's no way to say that, oh, maybe it was laid on Yantif. The day before is clearly not Yantif. Chavtes El is clearly not Rosh Hashanah. So by the time the second day of Rosh Hashanah rolls around, the egg should be mutter. It should no longer be Muktzah. So the Gemara ends off, again, for now at least, the Gemara ends off at this point. We're gonna come back to analyzing this in a second. Okay, so then the Gemara says, Amar Mar Zutra, Lo Amran Ela De Ishtahi, Ava Lo Ishtahi Mashinan Lei, Ravashi Amar Afa Gav De Lo Ishtahi Nami Lo Mashinan Lei. The Gemara has a further machlokas within this halacha that we noted about either, you know, about burying a mace on Yantif Sheni yourself, or having a non-Jew doing it on Yantif Rishon. There's a machlokas if that's always true. So according to Mar Zutra, that rule that we said that you're allowed to bury a mace on Yantif Sheni or Yantif for the non-Jew is not always true. That's only true if for whatever reason you didn't get around to burying the mace when he died. Let's say the guy died on Erev Yantif, or he died 2 days before, and for some technical reason, let's say the guy died 10 minutes before Yantif, and there was just no way to bury him. So in that case, then you have a hetzer to bury him on Yantif, because otherwise we're afraid the body is going to decompose. But if the guy died mamish on Yantif, so then Mar Zutra says you have no hetzer to bury him on Yantif at all. However, Rav Ashi disagrees. Rav Ashi says, no, even if the guy died on Yantif itself, you're allowed to bury him on Yantif. What's the logic here? My taima, Yantif Shane. According to Rav Ashi, he treats Yantif Sheni like a weekday when it comes to burial. So for the purposes of burial, everything is mutter on Yantif Sheni, even to make shrouds, to cut myrtle branches that they used to put with the coffins. Everything that you need to do for Kvura, says Rav Ashi, is mutter on Yantif Sheni. And again, obviously, Mar Zutra is going to disagree with that and say that it's only mutter in certain extenuating circumstances. And then the Gemara ends off and points out, Amar Ravina, Veha Inna De'ika Chavari Chayshina. So Ravina basically flips this whole halacha on its head. And he says, this whole halacha that we've been discussing about burying mesim on Yantif is not applicable anymore Bezman Hazeh, and it's usher to bury a mace at all on Yantif, even with the non-Jew on the first day. Why is that? So the Gemara says that because we have these Chavare. The Chavare were these Persian priests who worshipped, I don't know, fire, the sun, whatever it was. And basically, the way the Rashi explains it is that these priests would essentially, if they saw that the Jewish people were engaged in burial on Yantif, they would say, oh, the Jews don't care about Yantif, they're being mezalzel on Yantif. So because we don't want to give off this mistaken impression, Ravina says we just outlawed doing burial at all on Yantif. Now the truth is that Tosos, in the long Tosos here, has a discussion about whether this would apply Bezman Hazeh, because we don't have these Persian fire priests or whatever you want to call them around today. So Tosos discusses maybe we should revert back to the original halacha. Maybe we should allow burial. So that's a whole discussion in the poskim, whether that should be true. But the pashtus is that we generally do not allow burial on Yantif, even on Yantif Sheni. Okay. Then the Gemara says, Ravina hava Yosef kamei de Ravashi b'shnei yom tovim shal Rosh Hashanah chazi d'hava atziv. Amar le'a my Simar. So Ravina was sitting in front of Ravashi. It was Rosh Hashanah, and he saw that Ravashi was upset, and he said, "What are you upset about?" Amar le de lo osive eruve tavshin. He says, "I forgot to make an eruv tavshin." So obviously the case was Rosh Hashanah was a Thursday, Friday going into Shabbos, and because Ravashi forgot to make an eruv tavshin, he was bemoaning the fact that he wasn't going to be able to cook and to bake for Shabbos. So Amar le, so Ravina said to him, "What's the big deal?" Velosiv marha inda milo amar Rava meniachanim eruv tavshin miyotav lachaveru masna. So big deal, make your eruv tavshin today on the first day of Rosh Hashanah. Why was that okay? Because Rava tells us, Rava tells us a little bit later on in the Masechta that let's say it's the first day of Yontif, and the guy realizes that, and it's again Thursday, Friday, he realizes that he forgot to make an Erev Tavshilin. So no problem, Gemara says, make the Erev Tavshilin today. How does that work? So the Gemara says, you can make it with a Tanai. What's the Tanai? The Tanai is that if today is really Yontif and tomorrow is not, so then anyway, I don't need an Erev Tavshilin anyway because I'm allowed to cook on a Yom Chol for Shabbos if Friday really is a Yom Chol. And if tomorrow is Yontif and today is a Yom Chol, then this Erev Tavshilin would be valid anyway, just as any Erev Tavshilin that you would make on a Yom Chol. So why is that not a valid option? To which Ravashi says, no. Amar le, Amar da Amar Rava, Bishnei Yom Tovim Shal Golios, Bishnei Yom Tovim Shal Rosh Hashanah B'Yamar. The Gemara says, who says that works by Rosh Hashanah? That Tanai, that stipulation, that might work by a regular Yontif Sheni. But as we've already noted, Rosh Hashanah, the 2 days of Rosh Hashanah, differ from a regular Yontif Sheni because of Tziyoma Arichta. So it could be that the Erev Tavshil that you make on the first day of Rosh Hashanah is not going to be valid even with the stipulation. So the Gemara asks, what do you mean? V'ha'amri Nahardai av Beitza Muteris. Didn't the Gemara just tell us earlier that the rabbis from Nahardai told us that a Beitza Shano on the first day of Rosh Hashanah is mutter on the second day? It's not mukta. So if that's the case, why won't the stipulation work? The Gemara says, no. Amar le Rav Mordechai b'Feirush Amar Limar de lo sover l'hadin Hardai. We don't pass like that. We don't pass like the rabbis from the Hardai. We assume that Rosh Hashanah differs from all of the other Chagim, which means basically two things. That first of all, a Beitza that was laid on the first day of Rosh Hashanah is still Muktza on the second day. And for this halacha, the Gemara notes that if you forgot to make an Erev Tavshilin on Wednesday, Erev Rosh Hashanah, then you're done. Then you can't make an Erev Tavshilin on Thursday with it tonight. If it's a regular Yontif, that's Thursday, Friday, Shabbos, let's say, and you forgot to make your Erev Tavshilin on Wednesday, then b'di'evan, you can make it on Thursday with this tonight, with this stipulation. But for Rosh Hashanah, the Gemara says that it's not going to work. Okay. Then the Gemara says, Itmar, Efroach shenolad b'yom tov, Rav amar aser, Ushmua v'yisema Rabbi Yochanan amar mutter. Rav amar aser muktzehu, Ushmua v'yisema Rabbi Yochanan amar mutter, Hoel umatir atzmo b'shchita. Now the Gemara presents the following machlokas. Let's say, this is not a case of a beitza shenolda, but an Efroach. An Efroach is basically a chick, right? In other words, the actual, you know, baby chicken was hatched on Yontif. So the question is that chicken going to now be mutter to shecht and to eat? So Rav says it's aser. Why? Because it's muktza. Why? Because it wasn't alive when Yontif began. So it's basically the literal definition of nolad. It was born on Yontif. However, Shmuel / Rabbi Yochanan disagree, and they say, no, that it's mutter. Why is it mutter? The Gemara says, because ho'olu matir atzmo b'shchita. Before the chick was actually hatched and born, there was no way to possibly eat it or shecht it. It wasn't alive yet. It wasn't born yet. Now that the chick has been hatched, and now that it's born, there is a possible way to now go ahead and shecht it and eat it. And since we have a viable way to eat it, according to Shmuel / Rabbi Yochanan, it is no longer mukta. So the Gemara now, clarifies. Amrile Rav Kahana v'Ravasi l'Rav v'chi ma bein zele egel shenolad b'yontov. Why is this case of the chick that was hatched on Yontif, why is it any different than a calf that was born on Yontif? In the case of the calf, everyone agrees that that it's not mukta, that it's mutter. Why then by the chick is there a machlokas? So the Gemara explains, Amar lehu holu muchan agav imo b'shchita. The reason why everyone agrees that a calf that was born on Yontif is certainly mutter to shech is because if you think about it, the calf would have been mutter anyway by dint of the mother. By the mother's shchita, the calf technically becomes permissible. This is the famous halacha known as a ben pakua, right? Technically speaking, if a mother is pregnant and you shech the mother and the baby somehow survives, technically speaking, midoraisa for sure, that baby does not require shchita. It's technically mutter to eat, again, without getting to all the discussions about how that works lemaisa, but in theory, the fetus or the baby that was just born is technically mutter. So since there's a way to permit the calf via the mother, and the mother, of course, was alive before Yontif began, that's the reason why the calf is mutter to shecht on Yontif, even though it wasn't alive before Yontif.
I thought you have to wait 8 days before
No, that's only for a karban. That's only for a karban. That's not for a regular animal. Yeah. So in other words, the Gemara says that's why there's this distinction. Okay. So now the Gemara pushes back again. Uma bein zel le'eyosh anolam and atreifa. So how is this case different? How is the case of the chick of the Ephroach that was hatched on Yotif? How does that differ from a baby, a calf that was born from a mother who was a treifa? So in other words, imagine that the mother, the cow in this case was a treifa. It had some kind of internal problem with its organs that was going to cause it to die within the year. The mother is certainly forbidden to eat, because we know there's an isra de oraisa to eat an animal that's a treifa. So there's no heter to shechta on yantif. Right? The heter of shechita on yantif presupposes that there's ochel nefesh involved. If you're not allowed to eat the animal, so then obviously you're not allowed to shechta on yantif. So how come in this case though, let's say I went ahead and I wanted to eat the calf. So in other words, the calf itself that's born from a treifa mother is not necessarily usher. Again, obviously if the calf itself is a treifa, then obviously it's usher. But if the calf itself is not a treifa, the calf could be permissible. So the question is, in this unique case where the mother happens to be a treifa, and I don't have that out, I don't have that heter to say, oh, but you know, since by dint of the mother, since I could check the mother on yet that the calf is mutter, I don't have that option here because in this case the mother is a treifa. How does that justify why now I'm allowed to shecht and eat the calf that was born from a treifa on yantiv? To which the Gemara says, you're right, shasik Rav. Rav was silent. Right? In other words, Rav didn't know how to respond to this because it sounds like it's a good point. So the Gemara says, what do you mean? Amar Rav of Yisim Rav Yosef, my time is shasik Rav. Why was Rav silent in the face of this question? Lemaluhu, why didn't Rav just say the following? Ho'alu muchan agav ima lichlovim. Why didn't he say that since the mother would have been permissible to shecht or to kill in order to feed to the dogs? Again, as we've already noticed in the Gemara earlier, when you have a carcass of an animal that died, so it's not necessarily muktzah on Shabbos or Yotze because you can feed it to your dogs. That's what Gemara is going to cite in a second from a Mishnah in Maseches Shabbos. So just because you're not allowed to eat it doesn't necessarily mean that it's muktzah. There is a use of the animal that you can feed the carcass to the dogs. So why is that not enough of a heter to justify shechting the calf that was born from a treifa? So the Gemara now points out, Amar le'abaye, hashda muchan lo adam lo havi muchan lechlovim, disnan mechaskan esha delu en lefnei abehima ve'esan avela lefnei aklovim, Rabbi Yehuda Omer im lo haisan avela me'erev Shabbos asura lefisha ena mena muchan, muchan lechlovim havi muchan la'adam. So the Gemara now cites the following question. There is a halacha on the books that we know from the end of Maseches Shabbos that when a food item or an animal or something like that is designated for human consumption, it is not necessarily designated for a dog to eat, because usually the assumption is that if something is good enough for a human to eat, you're not going to want to then give it to your dog most of the time. So the assumption is that when something, if you had in mind to set aside a piece of meat for yourself, you cannot then turn around on Shabbos or Yontif and feed that piece of meat to your dog, because you never had that in mind initially. What's the basis for that? So the Gemara cites a Mishnah that appeared, we quoted earlier, it appears later, it's also a Maseches Shabbos, which says that according to the Tanakhama, I'm allowed to take a gourd on Shabbos and chop it up and feed to my animals, but more relevant for us, I can take the carcass of a dead animal and chop it up and feed it to my dogs. Rabbi Yehuda happens to disagree with that. Rabbi Yehuda says that the animal had to have died from beforehand because otherwise it's going to be muktzah. But again, we'll get back to Rabbi Yehuda in a second. But at least according to the Tanakhama, I'm allowed to take a carcass of an animal that died on Shabbos and I can chop it up and feed it to my dog. So it's clear as day that there's a halacha called muchan la'adam lo havi muchan lechlavim. That just because something is designated for human consumption doesn't necessarily translate to mean that it's going to also be set aside for my dog to eat. The question, however, is what would the din be in the opposite case? What if I had an item that I dafka set aside for my dog to eat, would I then be allowed to turn around on Shabbos or Yontif and eat that item myself? That's the Gemara's question. So the Gemara says, "Yep, Amar le'in muchan la'adam lo havi muchan lechlavim demay dechazi le'inish lo shadi le'lechlavim." Whereas muchan lechlavim havi muchan la'adam the daiti de'inish akomidi dechazi. The Gemara says, "You're right that there actually is in fact a distinction, namely that just because something is set aside for you to eat doesn't mean that your dog is allowed to eat it. Because again, as we noted earlier, when something is good enough for human consumption, it's unlikely you're going to want to feed it to your dog. However, the opposite is also true. The Gemara says that if something is designated for your dog, you can in fact eat that on Shabbos or Yontif. Why is that? So the Gemara says, because if it's technically even barely edible, then a person would still eat it. In other words, as long as the food is basically kosher and basically edible, even if it's not maybe the highest, you know, graded quality of food, but lemaisa, if you can eat it, you would still want to turn around and eat it at some point. So the Gemara says that, in other words, again, assuming that the food is somewhat edible, so just because you set it aside for your dog to eat, it doesn't necessarily mean that you would no longer eat it. So if I set aside a piece of meat on Erev Shabbos or Erev Yontif for my dog, and then I decide I want to eat it, that's okay. That's technically okay on Shabbos or Yontif, but the opposite would not be okay. Okay, so now the Gemara clarifies again. Tanya kevase derav, Tanya kevase deshmuel v'yisema Rabbi Yochanan. Tanya kevase derav. So again, Rav was the one who told us back on the previous Amud that when the chick was hatched on Yontif, it's going to be usher. So this Bryce is now going to corroborate that statement of Rav. Egel shenolad b'yontif mutter, refroch shenolad b'yontif usher. So again, there's this distinction. A calf that was born on Yontif, you are allowed to shecht and eat, but the chick that was born on Yontif, you're not. What's the difference? Uma hefresh ben zelazeh, ze muchan agavimo b'shchita, veze inu muchan agavimo. Again, the case of the calf, as we noted earlier, because you could shech the mother, so therefore the calf is going to be permissible as well. In the case of the chick, you don't have that heter because it's hatched from an egg, so it has no connection anymore to the mother after it's born. Then the Gemara says, "Tanya kavasi deshmuel v'yisema Rabbi Yochanan egel shenolad b'yom tov mutter ve'efroach shenolad b'yom tov mutter." According to this brisa, this one supports Shmuel slash Rabbi Yochanan that even the chick that was born on Yontif is mutter. My taima zemuchan agavimo v'zemater atzma b'shchita. Again, as we noted earlier in the Gemara, according to Shmuel slash Rabbi Yochanan, the reason why it's mutter is because before the chick was hatched, there was no way for you to possibly shecht it. Now that it's born, there is a way out for you to shecht, you know, for you to shecht the chick, and that's what makes a mutter on Yontif. Okay. Then Gemara says, Tana Rabbanan, Efroach shenolad b'yomtov aser, Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov omer, af b'chol aser lefi shalon ispatru enav. So now the Gemara has an interesting machlokas. According to the Tanakama, again, so the Tanakama seems to be assuming, like Rav's position, which is that a chick that was laid, that was hatched on Yontif, is aser because it's mukta. However, Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov assumes that a chick is usher even during the week. What's the issue during the week? So as we'll see in a second, the Gemara says, because lefi shalon is patru enav. Before the chick has opened up its eyes, it's not considered to be like a viable creature. And we'll see in a second that it's actually an isser, a violation of eating a sheretz. Now, usually we think of a sheretz as an insect, but the Gemara is going, as we'll see in a second, is going to assume that until the chick opens its eyes and is really considered a full-fledged living creature on its own, it's actually deemed to be a sheretz. The Gemara clarifies, clearly, Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov is the author of this brisa that states that we derive from this pasuk in Parsha Shmini that says that there's an iser de oraisa to eat any sheretz, to eat any insect. The Gemara learns in this pasuk that includes even a chick that hasn't opened its eyes yet. That still qualifies as a sheretz. So according to Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, there's an iser to eat such an animal even during the week, even not on Yontif or Shabbos. So the Gemara says that clearly reflects the shita of Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov. Okay, then the Gemara says, Amar Rav Huna, Amar Rav, Beitza im Yitziyasa Nigmar. So the Gemara starts out with this kind of a vague expression that says that an egg is completed or is fertilized im yitziyasa when it comes out of the chicken. So what does that mean? Ma im yitziyasa nigmara? Ilema im yitziyasa nigmara umuteres la'achla b'chalav ha'bimei ima asura la'achla b'chalav. If you're going to say what it means is as follows, that by the time the egg is hatched, by the time it's laid, it's no longer considered to be part of the bird anymore. In other words, anything that's part of the bird, for all intents and purposes, is considered meat. It's considered fleishiks. So at what point is an egg no longer fleishiks? Is an egg, you know, an independent entity? So the Gemara says, if you're going to tell me that by the time the egg fertilizes, now I'm allowed to eat it with dairy, I'm allowed to eat it with milk because it's no longer considered to be part of the chicken. So what's the implication of that statement? The implication is that if the eggs are still inside of the chicken, of the mother, then they're going to be usher to eat with milk. That those eggs are considered to be fleshic eggs. The Gemara says, well, that's a problem because v'hasanya hashochet es ha'tarnagolas u'matzah ba'beitzim gemuros mutaros lachlam b'chalav. The Brisa says the exact opposite of that. The Brisa says, if I shech the chicken and I open the chicken up and I find that there are fully fertilized eggs that are still inside of the chicken, I'm allowed to eat those with milk. So you see that even eggs inside of the mother are still considered to be fully fertilized to the point that they're no longer considered fleshic eggs. They're now considered to be independent entities that are permitted to be eaten with dairy. So the Gemara tries again. Ela im yitziyasa nigmura umuteres la'achla b'yomtov ha'bimeima asura la'achla b'yomtov v'hasanya ha'shochet es ha'tarnagolas umatzah b'beitzim gemuros muteres la'achla b'yomtov. And maybe you'll tell me that the ramification of the statement in the Braisa is that before the eggs were hatched, they were usher to eat on Yotif, and they were still inside of the mother because they were mukta. And only once they're hatched, now they're mutter on Yotif because they're no longer mukta. But that's also not true because the Braisa says, again, if I shech the mother and I find the eggs fully fertilized inside of the mother, I'm also allowed to eat them on Yotif, meaning to say that they're clearly not mukta. So what does the Gemara mean? So the Gemara then tries again. The Gemara says, Zachitema, kamash malam bivraisa, maidelo ashminam bimas nisin. Maybe you'll argue that really this is just a textual point, that the Braisa here is just coming to clarify something which was not already known from the Mishnah, But that's also not true. Hanami Tanina, Beitza Shenolda Biyantiv, Beishama Yomrim Tochal, Veisalom Lo Socha. That was the opening machlokas in the Masechta, and that's Beiza Manal. And machlokas Beishama and Beisalal, as to whether one is permitted to eat an egg that was laid on Yantiv. And the Gemara clarifies, Va'adkan Lo Plige Beishama Yuvesil El Benolda, Avo Bemeima Divre Hakol Sharia. And that machlokas between Beishama and Beisalal, as to whether you're allowed to eat a Beitza Shenolda Biyantiv, was specifically talking about a Beitza Shenolda that was laid, that was hatched on Yantiv, implying that if the egg was still inside of the mother, even Beis Hillel would agree that it's permissible to eat. So there's no chiddush being added here. There's nothing that we didn't already know from the Mishnah. So what exactly is this Braisa adding when it says that an egg that was hatched, that came out of the mother, is permissible? In other words, we already know all these halachos. So the Gemara then tries again. Maybe you'll argue another textual point, which is that perhaps Beis Hillel really do assume that the eggs inside of the mother are in fact forbidden, they're mukta, and why does the Mishnah formulate the machlokas as talking about an egg that was laid, if Beis Hillel really believed that eggs that are still inside of the mother are forbidden? So maybe that was just to highlight the leniency of Beis Shammai, that even when the egg was laid, it's still going to be permissible. The Gemara says, but that's also not an accurate textual formulation. Why? Because Ela Hadesanya, Hashochet Es HaTarnagolas, Umatzav HaBeitzim Gemuros, Mutaros Lachlan Biyadav Mani, Lo Beis Shammai VeLo Beis Hillel. Because the problem then is, if you're going to make the argument that Beis Hillel say that even the eggs inside of the mother are forbidden, well then the Gemara says we have a textual problem. Who is the author of the following statement in the Braisa? The Braisa says that if you shech the chicken and you find fully fertilized eggs inside of the chicken, you're allowed to eat them on Yantiv. So who is the author of that statement? According to what we just suggested for Beis Hillel, Beis Hillel claimed that everything is forbidden, even the eggs that are found in the mother. And according to Beis Shammai, this halacha is obvious, because Beis Shammai say that even if the egg was actually hatched and actually laid on Yantiv, it's mutter. So this brisa seems to be either superfluous or wrong. So the question is, who would the author of this statement be? So the Gemara says, you're right. Ela im yitzyasa nigmara umegadeles efrochim, b'me'ima eina megadeles. So therefore, the Gemara suggests as follows. When the Braisa says that the eggs that were laid or that were hatched on Yantif are mutter, that means that the ramification of that statement is that the mother, that chicken that laid those eggs, is considered a chicken that's megadela sefrochim. That's considered a chicken that lays eggs. Whereas, if I shech the chicken and the eggs are only found inside of the chicken, that does not qualify as a chicken, as a mother, that's megadela sefrochim. If you remember, we actually referenced this back on Daf Beis, when the Gemara was trying to analyze what the case of the Mishnah was. Is that if we're talking about a chicken that's being eaten, is it a chicken that's meant for laying eggs? So the Gemara says that's the ramification. If the egg was actually laid, then the mother qualifies as a chicken that's megadela sefrochim, that actually lays eggs, that actually raises chicks. Whereas if the eggs were found simply inside of the mother, then it's not. So the obvious question is l'may nafkamina. So who cares? Who cares if the mother is a chicken that lays eggs or not? So the Gemara says l'mekach u'memkar. This has ramifications for business. What does that mean? Ki Yahuda Amar Lehu. There was a guy who was in the marketplace who said, some guy was walking around the marketplace. He was looking for eggs from a live chicken. He dafka wanted to buy eggs from a live chicken. So the Gemara says, Yahavu le beye de shuta. They sold him eggs from a chicken that were already shechted. So the Gemara says, Asla kame de Rabbi Ami. So he comes to Rabbi Ami, Amar, and Amar Luhu, Mekachtos uvahada. Rabbi Ami said, this is a Mekachtos. This sale was made on a mistaken premise. The guy dafka asked for eggs from a live chicken. They sold him eggs from a shechted chicken. The whole sale should revert. So the Gemara says, Pshita, of course the sale should revert, right? In other words, why would you think otherwise? The guy Dafka wanted to purchase eggs from a live chicken, and they gave him eggs from a shechted one. So the Gemara says, no. Maybe the guy really just wanted to eat the eggs. So why did he insist on getting eggs from a live chicken? Because one of the salient features of eggs of a live chicken is that apparently they have harder shells than eggs from a shechted chicken. Again, I don't know if that's actually true. That's what the Gemara assumes. So the Gemara says, L'may nafkamina l'meisa l'ebeine veine kamash malan. That one could have argued that instead of this guy getting his full refund back for getting the eggs from the shechted chicken instead of the live one, maybe we could just refund him the difference between the value of an egg from a live chicken versus one from a shechted chicken. Kamash malon, Rabbi Yami tells us, no, it's not true. You have to refund the guy the full amount, because when the guy said he wanted eggs from a live chicken, that's what he meant. He didn't mean just hard-shelled eggs. He really meant eggs from a live chicken, and therefore the entire sale has to be refunded.